we have no time to discuss in detail, because the time is limited. We only study the major point of the book of Genesis. So we are going to skip this part, and we go into the next one. Genesis chapter 11, talking about the Tower of Babel. Genesis chapter 11, the Tower of Babel. My question, the question is, why did the people in that generation try to build up a Tower of Babel? What is the answer? This will be the question in your test. Why did the people in that generation try to build up a Tower of Babel? Why? Which verse is the answer? Verse 4, Then they said, come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. They try to build a tower so that the we are not scattered all over the world, because the tower can help them to identify the location they live. Also, the tower typifies and represents that they can overcome the will of God, the Tower of Babel. Actually, this is a major rebellion against God. So you can see from the beginning of Genesis chapter 1 until now, people keep on sinning, committing sin against God. So it is not God who rejects people, it is people who reject God. Now you look into the teaching material. Babel, Arched, meaning the door of God. The ancient Hebrew root word means confuse, add. Purpose, one, wish to reach heaven and challenge God. Now, that is the purpose. Try to reach heaven and challenge God. Okay. Knowledge and skill made men proud, because they thought they had possessed this kind of knowledge and skill to reach God. In order to glorify man, not to God, if man can really reach, build a so tall of tower, then man can be glorified. But when the people have that kind of idea, actually it comes from ignorance. Today, which building is the tallest building built up by man? Which building? The tallest building built up by man. The tallest building. World Trade Center is not tallest anymore. Sears building no more. Malaysia one, yes. The one in Malaysia. They try to build a building the tallest in the world. The tallest one, Malaysia one, before their economy collapsed. They tried to solicit the contribute the investment from the abroad. And so when as soon as you landed on the airport of Malaysia, you can saw that kind of building. So a lot of people in Malaysia, regard that the building as a sign of the spirit, not spiritual revival, huh? The sign of economical progress of that tower. But because of that tower, the country was burdened financially. So every different part of the world keep on building the tallest building. Now what is the mentality inside? The same mentality of Babel. Try to be famous, try to promote the self, try to elevate self-ego, the tallest one. If you travel, I don't know now. I spent 2 years in Taichung to study theological seminar there. You travel the street in Taichung Church around, Xi Gua Da Wang, Niu Rou Mian Da Wang, every big king, Xi Gua big king, Niu Rou Mian big king, this are king, that are king. If anybody name, I'm a small king, maybe no guest. Nobody want to visit that one. Only you proclaim yourself, I am king. Then the business is coming. So this is the mentality of human being. The mentality of Babel, the Tower of Babel. So try to reach heaven and challenge the authority of God. And try to rob the glory of God. Try to glorify man. So that they will not be scattered throughout the East earthly country, the will of God. The result, those who do not do according to the will finally perish. Those who rely on themselves but not God will not receive the help of God in the completion work. See, God confused their tongues so that the work had to be stopped. And people scatter throughout the earth. So you see, if God tried to disturb the work of man, it's so easy, right? It's so easy. God said, God created the universe in his own words. So maybe God only think about it. Let me give them different kind of dialect. When God start to think about this, everybody start to speak different dialect. They have no way to communicate with each other. No. So they cannot cooperate with each other to build the Tower of Babel anymore. So if you think about what is the reason why the people in the world have so many different languages, you threw away the Bible, no answer, right? So Bible actually gives us a lot of answer, of a lot of questions which cannot be answered by the people in the world. You come back to the Bible, how come there are so many dialects in the world? Because God confused the language of the people. Let the people challenge God and become proud and sin against God. But gradually, the language become common to the people in the world. Nowadays, English almost the universal language in the earth. So gradually, the people can understand each other. Can you imagine about 20 years later, everybody use the internet? And then the whole world almost becomes a village. So maybe at that time, another idea of the Babel tale and the Tower of Babel is going to come again. So human being try to challenge God is a foolish idea. Point three. Archaeologists discovered the Tower of Babel at a period about 101 years after the flood, located 20 miles southwest of Babylon. The shape of the tower is square, the area of 49,000 square feet. The height can reach 600 feet and had a reach 157. So when you look into 157 feet, how tall is that? In 10 feet, one floor, 157 feet is about the tall of 15, the building of 15 floor high. That's not too high, right? That's not too high. Even they can build up a 600 feet, that kind of tower. It's about 6 stories high. it's not too high. Oh. But they use so high building try to challenge God. It's really, it's a joking, a joke. Oh. It had been built with a red, yellow, blue, and green color of brick. Ancient picture has been found in record, to record that the tower has been built to rebel against God. Within one night, God struck the tower and scattered them, that there was great confusion of language and great weeping. So if the language is different, the meaning will be different. One day I deliver a sermon in Taiwan. I speak Taiwanese in Taiwan. I'm talking about when I recall what happened. The one who translated when I was a monk, is what? The one who shared the head and the mark, the Buddha's Huixing. Oh, so the language is different, and he misunderstood the language. It's totally different. So when God confused the language, they totally understand, totally confused the meaning. One more time. In the family service, also in Taiwan, I talk with Taiwanese. Actually, my Taiwanese is not very good. I'm talking about in the church, we should not have somebody in Chinese, ganma, ganba, right? What does that mean in English? What do they say? Grandmother, grandfather, no. Godmother? Oh. Ganba, ganba. Is that right? Oh, okay. K-be-k-bu. Taiwan way, is it like that? 那我多加一句 K 一下 At that time I don't know what that really means, so a lot of people keep on laughing. What I try to say is all the brothers in the Lord are the same spiritual brother, but actually that is a different meaning. So when God make the language different, all the meaning different. All the meaning different. So God has so easy way. God has so easy way to confuse the people in the world. My original thinking can't help me to what? Means you have your own brother and you recognize other people become your own brother. But actually this terminology means what? A woman has second husband. So totally different. Totally different. And just like the same. Taiwanese, I talk about maybe the other language has this kind of double meaning. In Tainan, one day I conduct the spiritual convocation. I read the first John. The first John, the John write about 小子, Chinese say 小子, in English, what is English? Children. And I don't know how to read that. I read about 世件 or 修件. After I finish it, the people approaching the ball approach me, the Shogyan, that's what. Then in black society, they call each other Shogyan, Shogyan. I have no intention, but when the language changed, the meaning totally different. So when the people try to build up that Babel Tower of Babel, God confused the language. When this one say, let's bring the brick, maybe another understand, let me bring the water. So they have no way to contend. So when this one spend the French, let us eat, the other people make a misunderstand in Africa, let's go to the restaurant. So different. So there is no way they can cooperate with each other. So God has miraculous way to defeat the rebellion of people in the world. Okay. So Genesis chapter, we come back to chapter 9, chapter 11. Genesis chapter 11. You look into page 44. Woman character 9. From Shem to Abram. Okay. From Shem to Abram. The end of the chapter 11, he's talking about the homeland of Abram. Ur, 140 miles southeast of Babylon. In today's terminology, Babylon referring to which city? Babylon referring to which city? Iraq, capital of Iraq. What's the city of capital of Iraq? Baghdad, Baghdad, right. You look into the TV broadcast in the Gulf War, Iraq parked the most sophisticated airplane near the war. Why? Because they understand America treasured the some kind of archaeology site very much, and Ur has a lot of older buildings and archaeology site. So they parked the most sophisticated, most expensive airplane close to Ur. And this is the hometown of Abram. Now you look into one. Ur. Originally was a commercial harbor, one of the most famous cities in the ancient time. She was the center of commerce, culture, and also the city of idols and adultery. Leaving Ur prefigured leaving all sins. It is the first step of God's calling. The second is Haran. Located at the bank of the branch of Euphrates, Balak. From Ur to Haran is about 600 miles, and Haran to Hebron at least 400 miles. So after Abraham left Ur, he stayed in Haran for a period of time. But God was not satisfied that Abraham stayed in Haran. So God called Abraham again and want him to come out of Haran and to proceed to the land full of honey and milk, which is the land of Canaan. The father of Abraham, Terah, at the first also served the idols, and he did not have a firm determination in God's calling. Therefore, he and his son Nahor and Haran stay in the midway. They were not able to preserve and obediently finish the journey to Canaan because they stay in the Haran. And God want them to receive the best. God did not want them to be satisfied with the second best. God want them to receive the best. That is the reason God called Abraham once again to come out of the Haran and go to the land full of honey and milk. So what do they really try to tell us? After we believe in Jesus, we always contend with the second best. Do you know what is second best? After you believe in Jesus, right? Because your whole family are very godly, so you have very harmonious family. Because you receive the blessing of God, so your career, everything, it just goes smoothly. Then your life is wonderful in the world. Yes, this is good, but this is the second best. And what is the best God wants you to do? The best is the heavenly inheritance. That is the best. So even though if people have been blessed by God tremendously in this world, God still wants to use His Spirit to move the person, use His Word to move the person to pursue something best, if not the second best. The glory in the kingdom of God. In the glory of the kingdom of God. So don't be satisfied with the second best. Oh, God bless me so much. So I enjoy the blessing of God every day. you have to pursue the best. Spiritually accumulate the inheritance in heaven, which means what? Walk diligent for God. That is the best one. So you look into Abraham. That's when Abraham's faith really progressed. God promised to give him the land of honey and milk. But when Abraham reached to that piece of land, did Abraham really occupy that piece of land? No. According to the book of Hebrew, when Abraham reached to the land of Canaan, his faith progressed a lot. So his goal of life has been transformed. You look into the book of Hebrew, chapter 11. The book of Hebrew, chapter 11. Hebrew chapter 11, verse 9. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place which he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was to go. Verse 9. By faith, he sojourned in the land of the promise, as in the foreign land, living in tent with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. For he looked forward to a city which has foundation, whose builder and maker is God. So when Abraham moved to the Canaan, he already looking forward to a city, and the builder and the maker is God. Which is what? Which city? The heaven. God, the heaven. That is the best. That is the best. So we should not satisfy with second best, the blessing in the world. We have to pursue the best, the kingdom of God in heaven. Okay, now turn back to page 45. Page 45, in the left column. Now we are going to study Abraham's life. Abraham was considered the father of faith. He was a person who really had great faith. So from Abraham's life, we try to understand what does faith really means. Because nowadays we tend to define faith with a very narrow sense. When you heard a lot of testimony, faith means what? You believe God can do something miraculously to solve your problem. That is faith. So when you sick, you need that faith. Pray and God hear your sickness. When you're out of job, you pray and you want God to give you a job. You need faith. So nowadays we narrowly define faith in this kind of miraculous signs, in that sense. But if you look into the Abraham's life, actually faith has a broader meaning. Faith almost related to everybody's everyday life in detail, in your private life. Even though you're healthy, you still do need faith to live your spiritual life. We almost can say a person without faith can never live a spiritual life. Anyone who wants to live a spiritual life must be a person who has faith. So faith related to us every day. Abraham's original name was the father of high. Abraham. And later on he was changed. His name was changed by God to Abraham. God changed the father of nations. So Abraham became the father of nations. The father of faith, Abraham, he put God first in his daily life. Page 45, 1. obey God's calling and came out from Ur. When God asked him to come, and he came. Oh, this is called faith. Why this is called faith? Because Abraham did not know where he was going. Oh, that was his first time, and nobody before him went to Canaan before. Today, you migrated to United States, right? Before you migrated to United States, a lot of people were here already. So before you came, you wrote the letter, and somebody said, come to Los Angeles, right? This is the best place. Somebody say, come to the San Francisco. I'm living here. This is the most beautiful place, right? And somebody say, come to the East Coast. If you want to experience something really American, East Coast must be the place, right? So what, before you migrate to the United States, you already have received a lot of advice. Advice from other people. So you have no fear because somebody already proceed in front of you. But if you look into Abraham, when he tried to move his own hometown, he tried to separate himself from his own relatives. At that time, nobody told him, Abraham, where is Canaan? Nobody told him, what is the journey? Nobody told him. So this is the first time. He only believed God. God asked me to go, then I go. Do you have this kind of faith? Will? Very difficult, very difficult. I still remember a brother's testimony. Originally, he was teaching in a college in East Coast and very far away from the church. And then he had a child. And then the father just very concerned about the religious education of the child. And then this brother really intended to move to a place where there is a church. He can serve God and his children can receive religious education. So later on, he came to the East Coast looking for a job, and he did not find any job. And he went back to the East Coast. He resigned from the school, the teaching job, without finding a job in California. And then he testified the last evening, he sleeps in his own apartment, his own house. The house are provided by the school. He had a feeling just like Abraham, come out of his hometown, because he did not get the job yet, and he quit his original job. He did not know what is going to happen in front of him, but he only believed, my intention will please God. God is going to guide my way. And later on, he got a very good job. Out of his own expectation. Almost all his classmates cannot believe. Use his own experience, he can find out so good job. So sometimes when we make a move, and that kind of move, you don't have any experience, but you understand that is God's will, you have to do it. It's exactly the same with Abraham. Obey God's calling and came out from Ur. B, number two. He built an altar everywhere. Abraham was a person who put God first. He has his own feeling, right? He has his own feeling. But he put God first. God want me to go there, I go. Despite all my own feeling. He built an altar everywhere. Anywhere he went. The first thing is build an altar. What does that mean, build an altar? Build an altar means offering the sacrifice to God, means to worship God. So it's very important. If you try to select a college which you are going to study, there are a few principles you must abide. The first one, the best one, is to choose a college close to the church. So that you can attend the service regularly, and you can serve God fervently in the church. On the one hand, you can complete your study. On the other hand, you can progress your own spirituality. But if you really understand God's will is for you to study in a school very far away from the church, then the second thing you have to do is what? To build up an altar in the place where you study. What does that mean to build an altar? Every day, you have to spend a period of time read the Bible and pray. And every Sabbath, you have to keep the Sabbath by yourself. Keep the Sabbath by yourself. So if you try to to study in a school very far away from the church, you must abide this principle. So if a person chooses a school very far away from the church and also does not build up an altar and don't keep the Sabbath, after a few years later, after you finish the college student, maybe this person's faith is already gone. One day there was a brother stopped by Los Angeles on the way back to Taiwan, and he stayed in his brother's house, and this brother came to the church. And then I greeted with the brother and talked with the brother. I feel that how come this brother's face is so cold? No affection to the brother and sister in the Lord. Do you know, if you have a good spirituality, you have the love of God inside your heart. So when you look at the brother and sisters, you feel very joyful because you have the love of Jesus. But if you look at brother and Jesus Christ, you have no feeling, means what? You have no love of Jesus Christ in your heart. So later on, I asked his brother, what's going on with your brother? He said, my brother originally in Taiwan was very fervent. And later on, the brother applied a school in Florida and studied there about 2 or 3 years. In that 2 or 3 years, the brother never came to the church and never attended the service and never keep the Sabbath. So after 2-3 years, even though he got a master's degree, but his faith declined a lot. I did not know whether his brother right nowadays in Taiwan still very further in the church. Bye-bye to God. So build an altar everywhere. Three, offer the thanksgiving to Melchizedek. Abraham offered the thanksgiving. Chapter 14. What does that mean? Chapter 14. Abraham offered the tithe to Melchizedek. That is a way Abraham showed his gratitude to God, for he offered the tithe. This is means he put God first. So you see, the way we spend the money. In order to live comfortably, we spend a lot of money to make our lives comfortable, right? But concerning the offering, some of the believers feel reluctant to do so. So they try to bargain with God. Offer the tithes. If that means my income after I deduct the tax, after I deduct the mortgage, and then I offer the tithes. If you do so, then your tithes will be a very small amount, right? Your mortgage, and you deduct your mortgage, deduct your tax, the only small amount of your tithes. So there was a brother asked whether offering the tithes is before the tax or after the tax. What's your answer? Whether you offering the tithes is before the tax or after the tax, what's your answer? You offer the tithes before the tax or after the tax, what is the correct answer? Oh, everybody's silent. Why? Is that the challenge to you? Before the tax? Okay. Anybody think after the tax? Don't feel shame about that. This is not definitely right or wrong. Okay, after the tax. Whatever you get. Okay. I think all depends on how do you see the tithe. If you see the tithe as the IRS try to tax you, guys try to tax you, right? Then you fill out the 1040 form, right? You fill out the 1040 form. There's a column, how much money we can deduct, right? Including the contribution to the church. You want to maximize your deduction so that you can reduce the amount of your tax. Right? That is the mentality we offer the tithe, right? But if you offer the tithe with the heart of thanksgiving, then I think either before the tax or after the tax, it's very easy for you to decide. And if you firmly believe offering the tithe, you will receive the blessing. I think it's even more easier for you to offer the tithe, right? God is going to bless you if you know how to give thanks to God. So it all depends on your faith. It's okay after the tax, but it's okay before the tax. It all depends on your faith. It depends on yourself. But as long as you offer the tithe, they will be good. So Abraham offered the Thanksgiving market Zedek. So we have to learn to give thanksgiving to God. But actually, when you think about one step further, I offer the money to God. This is a beautiful description. I offer the money to God. But actually, did God take away your money? You look into your offering to the church. You offer the money to the church, then what? The church can put on a new air condition. If you don't offer the money to the church, the church just use the older fan, keep on roaring, the hot air keep on circling around, right? Who suffer? It's you who suffer. The one who suffer, right? So you offer the money, who enjoy the money? It's you. You enjoy the air condition, right? You offer the money to the church, so the church has money, the church buy more food for you, right? If you don't offer the money, the church has no money to provide you food. You only drink the water and fast and pray. Right? So who suffer? It's you who suffer, right? So in reality, the money you offer actually all used upon you, yourself, alright? If you join a club, you have to pay the annual fee, right? So if you join a church, you come to the church, you enjoy the electricity, you enjoy the comfortable reception, you enjoy the meal. If you use a practical sense, it means what? Actually, offer the tithe is for our own benefit. If you think about this, it will not too difficult for you to offer the money to the church. But if you want to put it more spiritual way, it means offering the tithe is offering to God. But actually, you are the one who use it. It is not God who use it. It never happened. The money keep on pouring into the church and the Sabbath day. When the financial affair opened the offering box, oh God, because yesterday Jesus took away all the money. It never happened. I never heard about this. If it has happened because last night the thief come in, break in. It's happened. In Taiwan it's happened. The thief come in and the offering box, they have no key to open the lock. So they use a stick. On the top of the stick, they put some kind of glue inside it. And put the stick inside the offering box and pull it out, a $100 bill. A second time, $100 bill, and take away all the offering. That only happened. Jesus never took away the money. The money used back to every one of us. So if you don't offer the tithes, the one who suffers is everybody who come to the church. So nowadays, you see in our church, in the beginning stage and now, it's different. I still recall when I was very young, I went to Taipei Church. In the lunchtime, in the kitchen, there was an offering box. Now, if you want to have a lunch, you have to offer a few dollars because you consume the food. But nowadays, no church use this kind of practice, right? The Pacifica Church in the dining area put an offering box. You eat one meal, $3. This is a set meal, right? All said that you went to my panel, it takes you $3 and this you had to offer aside. We did not do so. Why? Because a large church member contribute the money, so financially we are sufficient to provide the need of the church member. And Well, when the church member received that kind of good reception from the church, they were touched by the love of God, then they even contribute more money. I received some kind of publication from other churches, but because I want to know what did they really doing. And seldomly the other church will tell you how much contribution you have to contribute. They only send you a contribution form. But anybody who try to contribute the money will never say, I contribute $1 or $10. You have guilty conscience, right? So when you contribute at least 20, 30, that's far more than what you receive. Now, so the people who come from a willing heart always will contribute more than you receive from the church. Now, so Abraham, because of his faith, he offered the thanksgiving to Melchizedek. This is, means he put God first. He put God first. So if you look into the life of Abraham, really, he did a life of putting God first. And who is the one most difficult to offer the tithe? It's not the salary, the people who receive the salary. The most difficult one may be the business person. Make a lot of money because the tithe amount is so high. If you earn $500,000, how much will be the tithe? If you earn $500,000 a year, how much will be the tithe? 50,000, eh? 50,000 is not a small amount. You can buy a Lexus 400. It's not a small amount, right? But you forgot, after you offering the 50,000, you still have 450,000, right? No. So if you think about this, then offering tithe is not too difficult. There was a story I think I mentioned here before, a few years ago. It's only a story. I read an article. A Christian one day approached a pastor with a worrisome eye. And the pastor, I cannot sleep last night. And the pastor asked him, what happened? And the member said, I have difficulty about the contribution. And the pastor really understand. All of a sudden he understand what is the difficulty. Because last year he earned a lot of money. So the pastor say, you just pray to God. God, please bless me next year, just like the year before last year. Just pray in this way. So he said, oh, that's reasonable. So he went back. He started to think. Last year, the year before last year, I earned $50,000. So I offered the tithe of $5,000. So he wrote the check very quickly, $5,000, over to the church, And last year, God blessed him, so he earned $200,000. And we think about $200,000, what is the tithe? $20,000, a lot. So the whole night, he keep on rolling on bed, $20,000, so much money. So he was really cannot write a check in $20,000. So he could not sleep. So he think about the pastor's suggestion. You just ask God to bless you next year, just the way God bless you the year before last year. What does that mean? Next year your income will be $50,000 instead of $200,000. When you think about it, all of a sudden he realized, oh, it's not difficult for me to write a check of $20,000. So the people who earn more, actually the one most difficult to offer the tithe. But actually, the people who earn more is the one who receive more blessing from God. So Abraham, who knows to offer the thanksgiving to Melchizedek, really, he's a person who has a good faith. Four, believe God's words, believe the words of God. Abraham believed every word God told him. Five, had an active faith, a living faith. James chapter 2, verse 14 to 22. Sixth, he loved God more than his own begotten son. We are going to continue this evening.